Penguin Random House Audio presents Begin Again, James Baldwin's America and its Urgent Lessons for Our Own. This is the author, Eddie Escalade, Jr. For His Beautiful Heart. Introduction. Thinking with Jimmy. I arrived in Heidelberg, Germany on a hot Saturday morning the day after leaving Newark, New Jersey. This was the beginning of my stay at Heidelberg University as the 2018 recipient of the James W.C. Pennington Award. Born on the eastern shore of Maryland, Pennington escaped slavery at the age of 18, learned to read and write, and was the first black man to attend classes at Yale University. He went on to become a minister, and in 1849, the Heidelberg Faculty of Theology awarded him an honorary doctorate. It was the first time, I believe, that a European university bestowed such an academic honor on an African-American. And here I was, a country boy from Moss Point, Mississippi, who wrote about religion and race in the United States, flying across the world to accept an honor named after Pennington at a university founded in 1386. I met James, an American graduate student from a small town in Michigan who was studying at Heidelberg, as I checked into my apartment, House 2, number 64. He was charged with getting me settled on my first day at the university. The elevator wasn't working, so we walked up three flights of stairs with 3 weeks' worth of clothes in my suitcase. The apartment was small. I opened the door and immediately found myself in a kitchenette with the bathroom and shower right next to it. The stove had two burners. The oven was a microwave. 5 steps in, I stood in my bedroom / living room / dining room. The bed doubled as a couch. Then I spotted my desk. Nothing else mattered after that. The apartment with its high ceilings that kept the room from closing in on you had a dated feel, and comfort was not its primary concern. In fact, this part of the Heidelberg campus, and it is a stretch to describe it as a campus in any American sense, wasn't very appealing at all. All the buildings felt like they were constructed in the 1960s and 70s, square monstrosities with little character, strictly functional. James waited for me outside. We were going to buy my train pass, check out the grocery store, and travel to the Altstadt, the old city. As we entered the station, I heard screaming. People in front of us stood still and stared at some kind of commotion. I followed their eyes. 4 policemen were piled on a black man. 1 officer had his knee in the man's back. The others twisted his arms. His pants were halfway down his legs. His bare ass was exposed. The police pressed his head down into the concrete as if they were trying to leave the imprint of a leaf there. With each attempt to cuff him, the man let out a blood-curdling scream. All eyes were on him as the crowd stood by and watched intently, like spectators at a soccer game without any real attachment to the teams playing. I watched them as they watched the police and the black man. Their faces revealed nothing. They were inscrutable, at least to me. I had not been in Heidelberg for 2 hours. And police had a black man's face pressed down on the concrete with a knee in his back. He screamed again. I didn't understand his pained words. I didn't know what he had done, if anything. I only knew the screaming was all too familiar. James turned beet red and for some reason felt the need to apologize to me. There's a kind of isolation being in a place where you do not know the language. Words do not interrupt your vision. Silence allows you to see differently. During my short time in Heidelberg, I took in the landscape, the wildflowers, the cobblestone roads, the old buildings bleeding into new construction. One noticed a sadness. Perhaps it was the feeling of a place that had experienced the devastation of war, or the effect of having a U.S. military base shut down and the struggle of figuring out what would happen next. I saw the whiteness of the place. A smattering of color here and there, a soul food restaurant that played Al Green and served only Ethiopian food, and heard the beauty and harshness of a language I could not understand. Whatever I was experiencing, even in that initial traumatic moment, I was not in the United States, and to my mind, that was a good thing. I did not have to go on television and explain what happened at the train station. I did not have to explain it to James either. I wondered at the time if this was what James Baldwin initially felt when he lived abroad. an escape from the constant demand to deal with what was happening in the States and what was happening in him because of it. Paris became a refuge of sorts in his early days. Whatever Baldwin faced there, at least he didn't have to deal with the barrage of racist nonsense here. And in the silence that his lack of French afforded him, he could reimagine himself. It is exhausting to find oneself over and over again, navigating a world rife with deadly assumptions about you and those who look like you, to see and read about insult and harm, death and anguish, for no other reason than because you're black, or black and poor, or black and trans, or whatever. For me, the daily grind consumes. I cannot escape the news. I'm drowning in it, and in all of the nastiness of a country that seems or feels like it is going underwater. Heidelberg afforded some critical distance, a brief refuge from it all. A small apartment in a place where I did not know the language offered me an opportunity to be still, to quiet my head, and to think about my country and the moment we currently find ourselves in. I started this book outside of the United States. That seemed appropriate. It would give me a distinct vantage point to write about Donald Trump, race, and the current state of our politics. Plus, Baldwin insisted that it was outside of the United States that he came to understand the country more fully. My hope was to begin the writing in St. Thomas in a nice flat overlooking the Caribbean Sea, but Hurricane Maria took care of that dream. So I found myself in Europe, lecturing and teaching at a university where Hegel taught his Phenomenology of Spirit in the 19th century, and thinking about James Baldwin's America and what lessons it might offer our own. At the end of the second week in Heidelberg, I decided to catch a quick flight from Frankfurt to Nice. I wanted to see Baldwin's home in St. Paul de Vence, or what was left of it. I knew that his sprawling 10-acre property, the place with its welcome table that he finally called home for 17 years, was being destroyed to make way for luxury apartments. I found it a fitting image for his later life and a somewhat ironic fulfillment of his own prophetic witness, capital and luxury running roughshod over everything. Even his sanctuary failed to escape. I've never traveled within Europe before. They didn't give us papers to fill out. No one checked my passport. I simply walked off the plane that morning and into France. My taxi driver, Christophe, I imagined him as the white French counterpart of Black Christopher in Baldwin's novel Tell Me How Long the Train's Been Gone. A rather muscular white fellow who looked like he could be from South Jersey, drove toward my hotel. He seemed excited to practice his English. I mentioned the purpose of my visit. I'm going to St. Paul de Vence to see the remains of the house of a famous African-American writer. The remains. It was as if I were visiting a gravesite. Christophe interjected, No, you should visit the place immediately. Nice would be cut off from traffic later in the day, he told me. France was preparing for a national dance party that evening, and I found the idea of a national dance party odd. Plus, France's second game of the World Cup was scheduled at 4 p.m. He made an abrupt U-turn, and we headed toward Baldwin's home. When we arrived in St. Paul de Vence, Christophe walked with me down the Route de la Colle toward Baldwin's home. I saw the tips of moving cranes. We were so close. Soon the beginnings of the new apartments came into view, concrete foundations with red wooden side rails for protection. Men were busily moving about. Below us was an absolutely stunning view of the countryside. I imagined Baldwin waking up, probably at midday, after a night of heavy drinking and intensive writing with coffee and cigarette in hand, stretching and looking out at the expanse, readying himself for another day. Sounds of an active construction site interrupted the scene, especially that damn sledgehammer. Finally, we arrived at what was left of Baldwin's house. Huge cranes lumbered, bulldozers cleared land, and a sign on the wall said it all. Les Jardins des Arts, 19 appartements, de grand luxe avec vue mire panoramique, réservé maintenant Sotheby's International Realty. From outside the fence, I saw portions of the main house still standing. Christophe said, we should see if anyone's here. Maybe they will let us in. I thought that was rather brazen, but he walked up the stairs and knocked on the door. I must have looked unnerved. What do we have to lose? He asked, looking back at me with a slight smile. Two white women greeted us with decidedly British accents. They thought we were potential buyers, an African-American man dressed in a blue linen shirt and...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?